Welcome, everybody, to the 30th of August Aries Bifold user group call. We're glad to have everybody. First, want to note the Linux Foundation antitrust policy and the Hyperledger code of conduct. So make sure you're being nice to one and all. Yeah, we're glad to have everybody here today. Feel free to add yourself to the attendees list. Start off with announcements and deployments and work updates. Anybody want to highlight any work or announcements?
It's been a while since I've been on the meeting, so I'm not sure what was updated last time, but there's been a significant amount of work, I guess, in terms of like just styling the wallet and whatnot and adding some new features. So it looks like I can see that it says ability to remove the credential from the wallet. So was that covered last time or?
I was not, so we ended up not doing last call because Jason wasn't able to run the call. So,
I guess, a
brief summary of what you guys have been doing there would be awesome.
Yeah, so we updated the React hooks, which gives us the ability to get record updates. And as part of the updates to the hooks, it provided the ability to delete records. And so because of that, we integrated that into the wallet. And now we have full removal capability of records. So for now, what we've done is we've implemented the ability to remove a credential from the wallet. Eventually, we're going to also add on the ability to remove a contact as well. So we haven't touched the contacts list right now. And then as part of that update, what we're looking at is when you remove a contact, do you also want to remove all the associated credentials for that contact, because we don't know if it makes sense to keep credentials without knowing which contact they're from or without the context of that. So
right,
that'll be something we're looking at down the road.
Well, awesome. I think this has been a thing that I wanted to do for a while, so I'm glad that you guys have been able to get to it.
It's in the latest iteration, yeah, so if you guys have the wallet, it should be there.
I also know that you guys have been doing some work on the biometrics and how to handle that without, if you don't want to do biometrics and then PIN and biometrics and stuff. And so it's been cool to see some of that.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of work is going on right now with biometrics. Currently, biometrics is required, but I believe Jason is just working on perhaps making that opt-in. So PIN or biometrics. So you should be seeing an update for that soon as well. I believe right now biometrics is like required. So you will have to have either your fingerprint registered or have Face ID or something like that. But we're looking at relaxing that.
Awesome. I also want to call out that I'm working right now on getting Bifold updated to React Native 0.69.5. That is going fairly well so far. One of the things as part of that is updating the peer dependency on the React Hooks PR, on the React Hooks extension, and I have a PR in for that. So, awesome. So far, have put together these items on the agenda. Are there any other things that we would like to add to the agenda or adjust?
If we have time, I guess that's a lot of subjects, so we probably won't. But at some point, I'm starting to dig into, wacky. Credential manifests, presentation exchange, And so I'm interested in anything that people like to discuss about that for a mobile wallet. And also I noticed AFJ's got updates about the action menu protocol. So those things are all interesting to me. Happy to hear anything.
Yeah, I think both of those would be interesting subjects to discuss. And if we don't have time for those today, I would love to put those on future agendas. So,
I think Stephen Curran from the BC team is also quite interested in action menu too. So that should be a good topic.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing here. We are also interested and we're looking on adding OCA mix with the presentation exchange.
Speaking of OCA, I think Keith has been working on some cool things related to that. Do you want to take away our first topic here?
Sounds good. I wouldn't necessarily call what I've been doing OCA completely. There's some other people working on actually putting in the real OCA. But one of the requirements, as we're getting closer to release kind of the first version of our wallet within the BC Gov, is to add credential branding. So while we get like OCA like fully implemented in the wallet, we've added the capability to brand credentials at a basic level. So I guess I'll have to, I might have to stop sharing. There we go. So I'm just going to share my screen here so you can see. So what we've done is, as part of the configuration bundle, we've added in this OCA bundle, which is essentially an object of a key value pair. The key being the schema of a credential that you're interested in branding. And then the value will be this object, which we've called an overlay. So the overlay is just a simple set of options that you can apply in order to get some basic branding. So here's an example of my wallet that has no branding applied. And the colors are automatically generated based on the name of the schema. And based on the color that's generated, the titles will also be colored appropriately. So if it's a dark background, it'll be a white text. And if it's a light background, you'll get a darker text. And, you know, that's kind of there by default, but we want the ability to brand things nicely. So I'm going to show you a video of kind of systematically applying some of these options in order to get a nice branding. But these are the options that we have that you can apply. So background colors, you can specify a background image, you can specify branding for the header as well as the footer. And these are typed accordingly. And so with Bifold, the OCA bundle is left empty, but if you have your own version of the wallet, you can apply your own OCA bundle, which we've done for BC Wallet. So I'm going to show you a video for that. All right, you guys can see the video here?
Yes.
Awesome. Let me know if the sound's too low if you can't hear it. So navigating over to the list of credentials I have in my wallet, you can see two that are here, which have default branding applied to them. The default branding will automatically apply a background color and will update the text based on the color of the background. In order for us to customize the look and feel of our credential, we'll add an entry into this branding object. This branding object takes an overlay. We're going to start by styling this Law Society of BC credential. In order for us to do that, we're going to add the schema name as the key for the overlay settings that we're going to apply for the credential. The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to apply a background image. As you can see, the background image has been updated, but let's take this a step further. And we're going to style the header. So we're going to add a background color to the header. And as you can see, once we do that, the text has automatically been updated based on the background color itself. We can go ahead and override this if we want. So for example, if we wanted gray, we could just simply add a color property, but we're okay with it being white right now, so we're just going to leave it as is. Instead, we're going to add a logo. So here we've applied a logo which has been scaled down to fit within the header. Since the logo already has the name of our issuer, we can go ahead and hide the issuer name that's generated on the credential. And now we have a fully branded credential for the Law Society of BC in our wallet. Let's take a look at another example. So here we have a student card with some basic branding, but we're going to go ahead and change this as well. So we add another entry into our object here that corresponds to the schema name of this credential. And we're also going to go ahead and apply a background image to it. Now, as you can see, the background image was applied. However, the text has not been updated based on the image. And the text is a little bit dark. So we're going to go ahead and update that color. So for the header, we want our text to be white. And then we can do the same thing for our footer. Last but not least, we're going to go ahead and apply our own logo to the header. And there you have it, a fully branded credential, which is a student card that's provided by the BC Wallet demonstration. All right, so that is the video I wanted to share, but does anybody have any questions so far about the sort of mechanisms that we're using? Like, this is sort of a first pass at doing some branding here. And obviously, as OCA comes in, we'll get like more flexibility and more customizability for the branding. But we wanted to have some options out of the box. Now, this is opt-in. You don't necessarily have to use the OCA bundle if you don't want, but it's there just in case you want to apply some branding based on a simple template. So just going back, like we have a couple cards here that we're showcasing as part of the release for our wallet. So, you know, we have a few different environments, and if I go ahead and update this. We've specified this as part of like our app configuration here in the BC wallet, and then we pass that as our customized configuration. So the branding that we've provided in our wallet will not appear in Bifold, but Bifold has the ability, if we wanted to have some some basic credentials that are common out of the box, we could add some branding directly into that wallet as well. So that's pretty much the feature I wanted to showcase. Sam?
So first of all, this looks awesome. Second of all, have you experimented with putting attribute values in the display of the card, like the name on the student wallet, or, you know, like the student position or faculty, or, you know what I mean? I'm making stuff up, but yeah. Attributes from the credential itself.
Definitely. So the way I've structured the credential card is that there's three components basically to it. You have the header, you have the body, and the footer. Now, the body does nothing right now. It's basically a simple view. But I know that we're experimenting with some wireframes to add some attributes to the body itself. So down the road, it's something that we could definitely update with so that there are attributes displayed sort of in the card here. Right now, we've left it as is because the idea is that you'll go into the details page and then you can kind of see the values there. But yeah. Definitely something that we're experimenting with. And it's definitely something that we want to have with OCA as it becomes available in the wallet.
Word. Nice work.
Yeah, Keith, that demonstration was awesome. For one, your video. So, keep using that. That's awesome. And I don't think I understand all of how OCA works, but I'm super intrigued now. So thank you.
Yeah. So, and I mean, this, I wouldn't call what we've done OCA. It's really just what we're doing is we're providing a way to brand off of a template. OCA should give you way more customizability in terms of what you can put on, and even displaying, you know, multilingual attributes and values and things like that, and being able to apply your own CSS and whatnot. So it'll be really interesting to see how this evolves.
Yeah, fair enough.
Very cool, Keith. Thank you for sharing.
No worries.
Any other questions for Keith? Okay. Awesome. The next item on the agenda we had was from our side, Ryan has done some work on the revocation notification. And we wanted to do a demo there. So Ryan, you ready to take it away?
Yeah. It's gonna be tough to follow Keith after that. That was a really cool demo. But
I'm really looking forward to this feature.
Yeah. It should be a pretty short demo here. Just kind of gonna I have a Bifold wallet initialized, and I already have a credential issued to it, so I'm just gonna go ahead and show you. We got the home screen here with two credentials in the wallet, and Patrick, if you want to go ahead and revoke that credential. Let's see. Awesome. So basically we just added a new notification type that'll let them know that the credential was revoked and give them the credential name. And once they navigate to the credential, so I apologize, there's a little bit of a styling weirdness with the some conflicts with main, but basically it'll give them the revoked version of the credential, show them the date that it was revoked, and then the notification that was provided by the issuer.
So when it comes to revocation notification, the revocation notification allows you to provide a optional reason as to why the credential is revoked. So if that's present, we display that here. In this case, Patrick put string in, literally the word string. And the thought process is to have a default string that Bifold will display here if it is if there was no reason given. If there is a reason given, then that's what we end up displaying.
Yeah, and we did add a default reason. We can forget what it was now, but that was a good point. And then just one last thing to mention, the we're using a metadata tag to add to the credential whether or not the revocation message was seen or not. So this notification on the home screen is dismissed if they view the credential regardless of how they navigate to it. So if they click the notification or if they just go from the credential list.
Keith, you have a question?
Yeah.
So is the metadata data provided as part of base Bifold? Like we'll get this out of the box? Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. Like this is actually something we've been really looking forward to. So prior to this, I don't know if you know this, but we tried to keep things in state to tell us when a credential was revoked, and it only happened at the proof request. So this is awesome. We've actually been looking forward to this feature for a while because A, we want to know when it was revoked at the time it was revoked. And we want to know that outside of the proof request. So I really appreciate you working on this feature. Like we really want this in.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. And I'd love to eventually add like some kind of details where they could view the exact time or further details, but
for sure.
Awesome. Thank you for the demo, Ryan. And our next item on here that I know was on a previous call, a BIFL call, but I believe that we had some low attendance, so I figured I would put it here just in case we wanted to have additional discussion here on this. I think, Sam, you may have been on this call, but the topic here is the when working with a proxy for your ledger requests, is there UI consent that we should be displaying to the user of, hey, we're going to be proxying your ledger requests through this service? Or do we need that level of consent? What are the needs here, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I remember being there, but to be honest, I don't remember the details of the discussion. I'm not sure how useful I am.
I'm curious, Akif, is this something that, because I know Stephen Curran is originally the person who's been driving a lot of the efforts behind doing a ledger proxy, because you guys have actually run into this. Is this something that you have more insight into discussing, or is this at this point, a moot point to talk about?
I know that we had started discussing the idea of a ledger proxy because, especially in enterprise environments, it becomes a challenge just with the way their networks are set up. Now, in terms of the consent UI discussion, I have not seen anything yet, but I can bring it up with our UX team. I know that they have multiple things that they're working on, so I'm sure that they might have addressed this. So cool. I can probably give an update for this next time, yeah.
Awesome. One of the things that I want to highlight here is that there's some similarities with mediation, and I wonder what kind of consent we have for mediation at the moment. And the reason I bring that up is that I think you could overdo this and confuse people rather than inform them. One is that a lot of folks are not going to have the slightest idea what it means when it says that their ledger access is using a proxy, right? And so I feel like there's an opportunity for a horrible user experience that makes the lawyers happy, but people unhappy. And I wonder if there's a way that we can not hide the fact that that's being done, or figure out the appropriate level of user consent for this, or user notification at least, in an environment where we are now, where it's a relatively small deployment. You know, I know that the BC Gov's got an issue with lawyers and on office Wi-Fi, for example. It seems like this could be something that would be understood in the basic terms of the app usage generally. And then as we understand more about it and more how it will be deployed, we can figure out how to adjust the UX appropriately. Yeah, so there's a lot of words, and I don't have a very strong opinion about it, but I think we could make this, like, we could exceed annoyingness that the EU has achieved with cookies in the process of doing this to a really horrible effect.
I guess the question I also have is, okay, suppose that we ask for consent for using mediation, but if they decline this, then the wallet is rendered pretty much useless at that point.
Well, same thing with the ledger access behind a firewall, right? Like, yeah. It's similar. You kind of have to pop up and say, like, hey, like, we're doing this. If you really don't want to do this, you should, like, close the app, right? There's not really a way to use it otherwise. And so I wonder what that appropriate level is. And there's probably useful lawyer input on this. We're certainly not trying to hide anything. I also just don't want to, like, I mean, I'm running this past, like, the my mom test. If my mom saw a notification that told her that, she would have absolutely no idea what it meant, and she would call me, right? And that's not really, I think, the level that we're going for here.
I'll ask our UX team and see what they come up with.
Part of, I think, the approach that I lean towards is providing the information of, like, you can see in your contacts who is your mediator, who is your ledger proxy. Oh, that's a pretty that needs a different label for end users, but be able to have them be able to see that information without necessarily having that be something that they have to like accept or agree to. It seems like a good approach to me in terms of at least still allows them to find information if they want to go looking for it, but isn't going to be the center focus for them.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And just, you know, the cookies example and also mobile devices, right? You get, you know, these permission requests for using the camera and things like that. And so stacking more of that is probably no good. And I guess, you know, in the, let's say the Google suite of things, right? They do pretty good, I think, of giving you like a settings page that lists a whole bunch of different things. And then only when you're actually using a feature that might have some legal, then they'll prompt you and say, you know, you've got to enable this setting or something like that. So, you know, something that's a little more like, don't overload you right away, but, you know, over time, walking you through your own settings.
Right. I think that's a generally good idea and course to take. So, awesome. Well, I think we can have further discussion about this in the future. Curious to see what your side ends up coming up with, Akif. I think overall this is I brought this up based off of the discussions that Stephen Curran was driving at. So if it's a if it's not a high priority on your end, we may not need to spend a whole lot of time working on the issue. But I wanted to make sure, because I said I'd bring it up, that we'd talk about it some. So
sounds good.
Next item on the discussion is action menu. Lance, you want to bring this up, and I'm excited about this discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't aware of kind of the action menu efforts. Just became aware of it this week, and so I was looking at some of the stuff that was in Akapai, I think, and then I saw some updates, some PR updates in AFJ about action menus, and essentially, you know, in my own interface, so, you know, I want to be able to have some dynamic menuing, you know, based on keys and values and things that maybe the user is being prompted for or that should be displayed. So anyways, I'm super interested in any efforts or plans that people have, and yep, that's a good one. Also, just before, did we mention anything with Interopathon? I just, because it's coming up super soon, I just wanted to, you know, throw a quick, hey, that's happening tomorrow. I'm excited to be there. I'm just going to be watching it as an observer, but there is a wallet specific breakout room. I can't remember what they call them, rooms, I think. So yeah, anyways, I'd like to know if anybody's going to be there for that, and anything in particular that I shouldn't miss.
Can I chime in a minute?
Yeah.
So there will be two things going on. We are taking what we've done in Cardia and adapt a little bit. In addition to the normal testing that we've done in Cardia, we're going to have a couple of rooms that are educational focused. So that will be kind of like 101, 102 type classes for folks that don't really know anything about it but want to. And so it'll be a good educational opportunity. And then we will also have there's two forms of testing that we've really done in the community. The one that we've done a lot is the Ares Agent Test Harness, and that lets you set up your agent for automated testing. The one we haven't done as much, and this is meant to fill in a little for that, is to actually like bring products up and run through them. And there's a couple of reasons to do that, even if you're you know, actively involved in the Ares Agent Test Harness. One is that there can be UX expectations of the other people. And when you actually bring stuff up on a screen and it's like the UX expectations are not met, you're like, oh, I didn't think about that, or that's a good idea, or other useful things. And those are not caught in tests because, you know, there's no function that says, hey, make sure this looks the way I expect, right? You can make sure that fields are present, but sometimes getting together and actually working through those things directly are really useful. The other thing is that we expect to find things that ought to be tested for in the Ares Agent Test Harness, but aren't yet. So that's a little bit of overview. There's two activities. One will be the educational aspect that Lance was talking about. The other one will be direct one-to-one testing. The goal here is not to make sure you have a perfect agent before you show up. The goal is to show up with what you've got. And often we learn a lot in the process, not just you know, people bringing agents, but the people working and focusing on the testing itself. And so there's lots to learn everywhere. This is not a scenario we're going to widely publish failures or anything of the sort, but rather an effort to just sort of get together and practice and figure this stuff out and make sure that expectations are met. And so success is not when everyone passes with flying colors, although that's desirable. The real measure of success is how much we can improve the environment, figure out new things to test, discover assumptions or expectations that were not correct or not evenly distributed or whatever. And so, yes, so please come. It's obviously free. If you have Zoom, you can come. And so even if you just want to lurk and just listen and watch and everything else, and that would be wonderful. So tomorrow, and it starts an hour earlier than the normal Ares working group, and there will not be an Ares working group call tomorrow. The Interopathon supersedes that. Thanks. Sorry, that was wordy.
No, thank you, Sam. Thank you, Lance, for bringing that up. And this will be very exciting, and I'm quite looking forward to the Interopathon. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, super exciting. Just worth double saying that there's both a sign up and a registration. So I guess NDCO is hosting the actual Zoom call. So you got to do both.
Yeah, it's harder on the community calls to do the management of rooms and settings and stuff. So I promise this is not an attempt to take over the world. It's just an attempt to try and make it function well. We've also had a problem with Zoom bombing in the past. And so
yeah.
Settings matter a lot.
Yeah, we appreciate that NDCO is hosting it, I should say.
Yeah, if you want to volunteer to host the next one, speak up. Please sign up. That will help us. Note. I'll get a link in the notes there, unless Lance beats me to it. But we will. If you can't sign up and like you'll need to sign up, but like if you forget to, it's like tomorrow, like go ahead and like sign up enough to get the Zoom link anyway and just come. Like knowing who's coming helps us sort of organize a little bit of stuff, but it's more important than you come than you fill out the form. So don't feel like you missed it or something because you didn't get stuff done.
Awesome. That was a awesome tangent, but I was curious on the action menu side of things, Keith, because I know that Stephen Curran has been interested in this for a while, and is this something that you guys have worked on or have looked at? Or yeah, I'm curious if there's things you've done there.
We haven't yet, but it's. Now that it's on everyone's radar, I'll bring that up with him again and see where we stand on that. It might be something that we want to work on next or soon.
Awesome. I think Philip, you mentioned interest here as well. So that might be something. Is that something you're willing to help out with, or what's your thoughts there?
Yes, for sure. Since you know we're already working with BC and Ontario, so
awesome.
I would say simple yes. Yep.
Great to hear. I guess to put it on everybody's radar as well is that In a similar vein, we have implemented the question answer protocol in AFJ, and we have, I think soon we should have a UI available for that in Bifold as well. And it's definitely a simpler experience than Action Menu, but does also allow, essentially you ask a question, you can get back simple answers, which can be as simple as a yes or no kind of experience, but that has allowed us to do some nice chat-based interactions of like, are you looking to get this credential or this credential, and then ask another question, and so on and so forth. So that has been a valuable tool as well. So I just want to mention that in case that was a protocol that you weren't aware of that is in a similar-ish vein.
I'm super glad you mentioned that, because I just came across that in AFJ, but I couldn't find any references to it anywhere else. So I was like, all right, they built this thing, but you know, somebody's got to be using it. Somebody wants this. So yeah, the work that you're talking about, is that in one of the Aries repos currently?
As in the RFCs, or as in
The usage of the question answer. I thought you said that you guys have already, you know, done some implementation, and yeah, the identity wallet that I'm working on, that I'm trying to transition towards Bifold, now all that stuff, it's chat based as well. So, you know, I came across the Action Menu stuff and I was like, oh, maybe someday I'll present an Action Menu, but you know, this question and answer thing looks promising as well. And so, you know, that would be one of the kind of first integration points I could start with. So mm-hmm. I just didn't see any other usage of it anywhere else. Maybe my searching skills on Git were not that great.
Well, so at this point, I think we may have had that at one point in the Cardia mobile agent, but I'd have to confirm that. But the primary thing I was referencing is we did have a iteration like on its separate branch of question and answer in Bifold, but that hasn't been PR'd in yet. So that's something that I would like to get PR'd in fairly soon. So that will be coming down the pipe, I guess, is what I'll say there.
Awesome.
Awesome. Anything else we wanted to discuss on the Action Menu front? Awesome.
That I'll mention that the area of overlap is relatively constrained to the quick forms feature of Action Menu. The feature of presenting, asking and or presenting a menu and sort of selecting options with menus is, I think, awesome. There's a little bit of overlap there with quick forms. And there's definitely a couple of different ways to do several things, whether you go from a menu to a question and answer, or you use a quick form or something like that. So it's worth, I think, as we gain more experience in what works well, like sharing that around the community. So if you have experience doing this stuff, that please speak up.
Definitely. And I also want to mention that I voiced question and answer. I don't think it's a question and answer versus Action Menu. I think they both serve good purposes that are related, but not necessarily like fighting in against each other.
Agree. Sorry. I didn't mean to like imply a cage match in there.
No, definitely.
I might have too. You know how this is when you haven't actually implemented anything. It's like the concepts are a little fuzzy. Am I actually, you know, understanding this and what it's used for? Mm-hmm. Well, one other thing that if I could just ask, so part of the reason that I'm going through a bunch of these things is, you know, I essentially, we usually use protocols for some kind of standard workflow, but then, you know, workflows can be super broad, you know, whether just depending on the industry that you're in, the customer space that you're in. So are there, I would love any pointers that people have for kind of workflow mechanisms that, you know, maybe a customer can define a workflow like in a JSON configuration that's like, you know, I want you to prompt, you know, them for this, and then, you know, they need to supply these credentials, and, you know, we have protocols related to these things, but then, you know, when you get more specific, are there any frameworks or things like that that I'm missing? And you may mention it and I'll be like, oh yeah, that's obvious.
Hey James, so I gotta run, but you should talk about machine readable governance.
Okay. Yeah. So I was gonna throw it over to Sam, but I can also talk about it. So I would say where I would immediately point is machine readable governance, because this is a topic that we've run into of, okay, how do we manage multiple steps in a workflow of you got to present and then issue a credential and so on and so forth, and manage that in a sane, not hard-coded way. And that has resulted in us working on machine readable governance as a tool. And that's currently being discussed over at the DIF, I believe it's the Interop group. And they're working towards a initial spec for that to have to be defined in. And but we've utilized this in multiple different cases and has been quite powerful for what you're trying to address there.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. I've heard you guys mention machine readable governance several times, and you know, again, it's just a fuzzy concept, but that sounds very promising. And you thought it was in DIF Interop meeting that they're talking about it? Okay. Great. I'm not sure if I've ever attended that one, so I'll try. Hopefully, it's not a conflicting meeting. Something else.
Hopefully not. Yeah, you can, if you also want, you can reach out to Mike Ebert from DCO, because he's the primary person who's leading up that effort.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I've chatted with Mike a few times. So yeah, I'll reach out to him.
Awesome.
Yes, thanks.
Yep, yeah, definitely. This has been a very productive call today so far. We've got some other items for discussion here. One of the things we were looking at was when it comes to pin entry, pin creation, actually I should say pin creation specifically. One of the things we wanted to do was automatically move from the first input to the second input so that the user didn't have to tap the second input. And this proved to be particularly challenging actually with the library we're utilizing. So I'm particularly interested if you have any insight here, Keith, of like, is this something that you have any idea of if we would be able to do with the current library, or because we were looking at it, it's like, okay, we might need to replace this library with either something else or implement it from scratch for the rendering of the entered fields. Any thoughts or insight?
I haven't particularly looked at it. I know that it's been an issue that's come up quite often. So we did autofocus the first of the two inputs. This is when you're entering a pin for the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is it pin create?
Yep.
I'm just trying to see, because I know that we did it for the first one, and I'm wondering if we can adopt the same approach for, okay, well, it has an autofocus. No, hold on a sec. Sorry, I'm just going through the code.
No worries.
So I know that we have an autofocus. Okay, yeah, so it's part of the library itself to apply an autofocus, but this becomes challenging, obviously, when you have two of these, right? Because it's like, which one is, it probably autofocus is the first one. What we could, I could try, and I don't know if this has already been done, is maybe we could add a reference and see if we can maybe do it that way. I haven't really tested this out, but has anybody tried a few different things? Or
I know Zach and I, one thing we did try, which was super not elegant, was setting like a state variable, and then once the first row was complete, we changed the autofocus to false on the first input and then set the autofocus to true on the second input to see if that would work. And unfortunately it did not. Then I think we tried messing with refs a little bit, but it does get tricky because they are, since we are using the library, it's like a nested components, and then it's the ref of the outer component as opposed to the actual React Native component. And
the autofocus, it looks like it only applies it on when it mounts the component, so I guess it would never get updated after the fact, like when data changes or whatnot. So maybe we can look into another library or something. I can do a bit more research on this, but this also might be a good first issue for somebody who's trying to learn the code base. You know, we could put it out in the community and see if somebody comes up with something.
I think that would be a good first issue for someone to jump into. And we can create a GitHub issue for that.
Sounds good. Yeah, in the meantime, if you want to assign me to it, I can take a look at maybe playing around with it.
Awesome. This is very this is encouraging because we kind of hit a wall. So we wanted to talk to the community and see if there's any insight or good direction ahead in. So thank you.
Yep.
And then we've got 8 minutes left. Lance, you want to talk some about Wacky Presentation Exchange? Would you like to delay that to another call, or what's your thinking there?
If it's a topic that people would want to discuss here, you know, we have several meetings for these different things, and I don't ever know, you know, with wallets, everything matters. So like every part of the spectrum. So I don't know how much people want to talk about that kind of stuff here. If people would like to do like a big talk about it, you know, I'd be happy to spend a lot more time reading up on it so that I can help facilitate that conversation. Or if people have quick thoughts and we just want to, you know, touch on it here for 5 minutes, I'll take anything at this point. You know, I'm just in that mode where I need to implement certain things. I don't want to just roll my own. So I start, you know, learning through the specs, and then I'm not sure how much, you know, has already been done. And so the more I can become aware, especially on the bifold side, the better.
Right. I think that I would like to have a little bit more knowledge on the Wacky PEX side of things. And, but I think from my perspective, when it comes to doing the JSON-LD credential exchange and or the issue credential v3 and present proof v3, which is what spawned out of the Wacky PEX effort from my understanding. I think my thought process is, I'm like, I would like to have these kind of non-cred space credentials. I would like to have those within bifold and the wallet side, but I think it needs to be done first in AFJ so that we can then actually utilize those within bifold. And I think on the AFJ front, the JSON-LD effort at least is getting closer. According to my memory, that is almost mergeable for issue credential, and then making progress on the present proof side of things.
Okay. Yeah, I need to get better at knowing the different verifiable credential formats, and specifically what's already supported and what's going to be supported, and then how it interplays. Honestly, I came from it from the side of DIDCOM talking about Wacky, and then me looking at it from like implementing a DIDCOM protocol. But then that kind of ties back to all of this stuff in terms of machine readable governments and workflows and protocols versus workflows and all these things. So yeah, I have a lot to sift through. So I don't know how much to say, but since I mentioned DIDCOM, I think that the reason Sam left probably is because he's about to do a DIDCOM thing with Daniel Hardman. So if anybody's huge fans of all that stuff, I'd say don't miss that meeting right after this. I think I'll post the link in here. Sorry, I'm like spamming. I'm spamming every part of the SSI stack in this meeting, but I can't help it.
I'm excited for the for that call here, and so I think it'll be good. And there's as you're saying, there's a lot to take in and figure out, and so. And you're not alone, for instance, on the wacky PEX side of things. My knowledge there is less than I would like. Sam Curran's a good person to talk to if you want information there, because he was part of that whole group and the outcomes and stuff. So my knowledge has been better suited on the non-creds and just JCLD within the present proof V2 space. So.
Fair, totally fair. Maybe when I get all my thoughts organized, maybe at some point I could like throw up a slide that's like, well, here's the stack that I used, you know, of SSI specs and the technology related. You know, what do you guys think? What, you know, what's available? And, you know, we can, it'll be more sorted out that way. So I'll try to make that something that I put together enough so that I can show it and people can respond and, you know, say what's hard and what's mature and what's not and all that stuff. So cool, thanks.
Awesome. So I'm looking forward to that, and I think that agenda worked out actually beautifully. I think we're just about out of time here, so thank you everybody for coming. This was a very productive call, and was exciting to see the demos and the progress that we've been making, and looking forward to the future with Bifold, and look to see you guys at the next working group call.
Yeah, Akeep and Ryan, awesome stuff. And James, thanks so much for hosting.
Thank you guys, yeah. It's a good meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks.